Hey everybody, welcome to episode 8 of Dice Thrower, and today I am super stoked to be joined by Rob and Brendan of Realm of Fire. How's it going, guys?
Hello, it is going good. It is, speaking of Realm of Fire, I am melting right now. There is hot weather in the UK and I hate it. What the hell? What the hell? I didn't sign up for this. This is what we didn't vote Leave to have hot weather.
It is sweltering. I had the same Realm of Fire joke queued up.
Oh, sorry.
Look at that. Great minds think alike. I'm well. How are you doing? I'm just sitting here. It's always like that here, so, you know.
Nice one. Well, hopefully we can make it through an episode without everybody melting. That'll be ideal. Nice one. So, hopefully folks will know you for Realm of Fire and have been checking that out. Brendan, obviously you've got a storied history of podcasts and content beyond Realm of Fire, Full Metal RPG. But just to kind of kick off, for anybody who hasn't checked out those things, do you want to give a quick intro to what you guys are up to and what it's about?
Go for it, Rob. No, man. Go. It's all you, bro. Go for it.
Okay, so Realm of Fire is really just a stream of consciousness podcast. We want to talk about Warhammer. We want to talk about Games Workshop as a whole, like the whole milieu, I believe the word is. And we want to talk about it from our perspective, which is a pretty anti-rightist, leftist perspective. We want to bring up these issues. We want to talk about things like gender. We want to talk about things like the reaction that the community has to various things, such as Age of Sigmar was really the sort of what we wanted to start talking about. But we're mixing it up. We're approaching 10 episodes pretty soon, which is exciting. And we've covered a number of topics. We've sort of flipped Age of Sigmar to 40K. And then I think we're going to try and do some more sort of like general ones after that, talking about player engagement, player, you know, what to do with that chud who's at the store talking smack about why there shouldn't be any black people in 40K, and, you know, to really sort of delve into some more of the fan side and the company side. We've sort of been quite lore focused and quite game focused, and I think we're going to move a bit more to the hey, shut up, like just play the game and don't be horrible side.
As it turns out, as a human being, I'm incapable of not talking about this stuff, even when I like want to. You know, the right wing dudes are always like, keep politics out of gaming, and like, to a certain extent, I can understand that maybe sometimes you want to sit down with your friend and you just want to be like, bro, what do you think of the new orc stats? And like, always having there be some dude at the table who's like, yeah, but Krieg look like Nazis, and I'm not happy with that, right? And like, and then, what does that mean coming into the argument, right? Like, it just turns out that I am incapable as a human being of not being that person. So, and is that annoying? Is that terrible? Am I a woke SJW? I mean, maybe. I don't know. So. Social justice warrior actually sounds great to me.
Great.
I don't know. I don't understand why that's a burn. I never understood why that's a burn. I remember the first time I heard about social justice warriors, and I was like, that sounds fucking rad. I don't know what the problem is. So, yeah, it does come up in our talk, and I mean, we definitely are not like tournament guys or list build guys. We're like chill bro fun hammer guys. So, you know, we end up kind of talking a lot about social issues, but also a lot just to, and we call it Realm of Fire because we think that we have scorching takes. If you want to stop by and tell us whether we have scorching takes or not, that's totally, we want to know, because we do, you know, we talk a lot of shit. We talk a lot of shit, but like, I don't know how scorching we are. I don't know. There's just no way to know. It's one of those things. When you are the scorcher, you cannot know how scorched one becomes. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's difficult, and it's a shame in a way that having, like, I'll say it, woke ideas is a hot take in this hobby now. That's a shame. Like what the hell? That should be, anyway. That's for our podcast. Listening to our podcast if you want to hear all that.
Yeah, we're just gonna take over your podcast, Will, and we're just gonna be like, we're just gonna use it as a soapbox to stand on and be like.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, for instance, Rob and I, we do have like differing opinions on this. Like, just this week in our private Discord chat, he and I were talking about the Krieg models, and, like, his take on the Krieg models is actually very different than my take on the Krieg models. So, we do have some healthy back and forth. It's not one of those podcasts that's just kind of, like, all one thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And don't get into Star Wars with us. That's our major disagreement.
Will, are you a Star Wars guy?
So it wouldn't be accurate to label me a Star Wars guy. I'm like one of those annoying people who thinks it's novel to say that they neither love nor hate Marmite, but I'm sort of similar about Star Wars. Like I quite enjoy it. I've never been deeply passionate about it, nor do I like hate it. So I can offer no Realm of Fire takes on Star Wars. I'm afraid. Some of them are better than others.
Yeah, truly. It's impossible to argue with that.
Yeah, that's a good opinion to have. It is of varying quality.
Yeah, which I mean, it makes total sense. I think like so many things. I mean, we've gone straight into a Star Wars tangent, but I mean, it's which is excellent. But it just, you know, it's going to be very dependent on your introduction to it. And I can, you know, I can completely understand. It's a beloved franchise for people, especially if it, you know, resonated with you at a certain age or a certain time. And I'm at the position where I was a kid when the 90s like re-release of the first, like the original 4, 5, and 6 came out. So my introduction was, yeah, like at a really weird point where I wasn't really quite seeing the originals because I think they'd done some tweaks at that point. Then yeah. Phantom Menace showed up, and so it was just quite weird. And now I'm in a position where I've got a son who's being introduced to it all with, you know, 9 films already out. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, he's got almost like a completely flat perspective on all of it because it's just all already there. Nobody has taken it and changed it. It's just there for his appraisal. And yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's very much a question of perspective and age and all sorts of stuff. But
this is the internet, dude. You can't say that. You got to like it or hate it. That's it.
Absolutely. Do you know, that's a thought. Well, I mean, I love the start we've made. It's been a great. It's been an intro to what Realm of Fire is, and then straight into the position of Realm of Fire as well. To use quite a British analogy, it's been a two-footed tackle of a start.
Straight in, full blooded. Can't even do a two-foot tackle these days.
That's what I thought though when you were saying about you know, like nothing is nuanced, is it? Nothing's ever nuanced on the internet. It's just you have to have polar positions on everything. Is never really how things can work, but that's how they manifest.
Go on, Brendan.
I'm sorry, I am not averse to nuance. I think nuance is great, and I love nuance. I also love conversation, and I love people having like diverse opinions, and then having spirited arguments. But and this is a role that I'm like having to become more and more comfortable taking on, as now I'm doing a podcast with Rob, who is in the UK, about a UK topic, which is Games Workshop and what Games Workshop does. And I'm an ugly American, you know what I'm saying? And we have, I'm an ugly American from the Wild West, which is notorious for its big, wide open spaces and its loud people who are very used to just not living in close proximity to others. And so we think that we can have a bullyish mentality about everything. And so, like, I am culturally, I am impolite. Like, culturally, I am hyperbolic. Like, culturally, I am sort of, like, bellicose. It would be disingenuous for me to try and be anything other than that. You know what I'm saying? And it just sort of so happens that we are also on the internet. You know?
I think we've got a strength in that, though, because it means, I mean, it's the classic thing of Britain and the UK, Britain and the US. We've got the same language, but we are so far apart in culture and how we look at things. You know, it's So, for example, to harp on again, the Krieg thing's a really interesting one. You know, Brendan said, these guys look like Nazis, you know, and that's a bad look for GW. So we talk about the Deathcore Krieg. For anyone who's not listening here, GW have just released a re-release of an Imperial Guard regiment, so the human foot soldiers of the Imperium of Man, and they are wearing Stahlhelms and gas masks and big greatcoats. So Brendan was like, these guys look like Nazis. And I'm like, no, they don't. They look like German World War I troopers. And that's, you know, fine. It's not fine. Like, you know, but the First World War resonates very differently in the UK than it does in the US. Like, it's a whole thing here. In the UK, there are many different views on it. Look, I'm literally as a mouse map using a book about 1918. But we have a very look at it that, you know what, there was this war and it was terrible, but kind of everyone was terrible. Like, there were no goodies. Whereas you look at the Second World War and you're like, no, you know, there was definitely a baddie, you know. And I think, so to see First World War imagery, for some people that's distasteful. For my friend it is. He referred to them as the World War I guys, and he didn't like that. But it doesn't, it's not as like, if the First World War doesn't hit like the Second World War. If they looked like stormtroopers from the Second World War, you'd be like, fuck you. Which, you know, old models did. Look at the old Orcs with the pickle harps, and, you know, they had the old biker stuff, and they had Nazi imagery. But, you know, that's the strength of the podcast. Where I'm going with this is that's the strength of the podcast, that we have a US and a UK perspective, which you would think is the same, but it's not. Really is not. There are huge differences.
Yeah, like, Rob's articulate and understands history, and I'm just a bellicose, loud person that has huge opinions and wants to everybody else in the entire world to share my opinions. Just like America.
It's nice to have that distillation of an entire, near enough an entire continent, just filtered through one person. That's ideal.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's really good though, because I mean, I've joked now a few times about the fact that this podcast is increasingly, I just sort of handpick people who I think I'm going to sort of roughly get along with, and like so many things, I think, you know, people are naturally inclined to do that sort of thing. You know, you are sort of drawn to people with similar tastes and opinions. And, you know, if I was probably trying to be a bit more objective about it, I might try and sort of diversify it. So, but I think, you know, to try and get a range of takes or a range of stances is really healthy. Even if it is within the, you know, the confines of two people who share, you know, like sort of social and hobby interests, if you like. But yeah, I mean on that topic, I mean, I think we may as well go there. You know, I like to do on this podcast, just if something interesting comes up, we'll explore it. You know, I think with that, you know, it's sort of topical at the moment. Kill Team is kind of, we're kind of sitting between it being announced and released, sort of thing, or it's all like there's been pre-orders now. And for me, you know, this comes back to a similar sort of discussion to a lot of GW discussions, which is that, you know, that they've got ideas and imagery which, understandably, you could look at as quite distasteful or not the sort of stuff that you'd want to, you know, advocate for. But then for me, it's about the context, because you know yeah, that's referencing some pretty unpleasant stuff. But then they're not selling that as like, here are the heroes, here are the good guys, and that to me stretches through so much stuff. I mean, you know, to sort of loop back to the top where you guys are talking about people with, you know, some sort of pretty distasteful opinions about the hobby. A lot of it for me seems to come down to just not being able to separate that idea that, like, these are not sold to you as heroes. You shouldn't.
I mean, the thing is I actually will kind of push back on that, because I think I've been playing Games Workshop games for a long time, and I think I've actually probably been playing less time. I know I've been playing less time than Rob. I might have been playing less time than you, simply because my introduction to it was kind of in my late teens, early 20s. You guys started when you were younger guys. But I'm an old man, so I've been around a long time, and I really have watched over the course of, like, over two decades as Games Workshop has continued to sort of, like, water down the social satire of the setting while, like, essentially trying to create a binary story that, again, and this is – perhaps I'm being too hard on my fellow countrymen here, but I do genuinely believe that they are trying to sell – a binary story that Americans will understand. And in my opinion, Americans are people who are without nuance. They want there to be good guys, and they want there to be bad guys. And they want this to be very clear. They don't like moral gray areas. They want there to be heroes, and they want there to be villains. And if you look at the early stuff, there's a lot of kind of controversy about, well, what's going on with Chaos, and what's going on with, like, the Horus Heresy, and, like what is it, what is it mean, right? But, like, they've literally started branding things as, like, Heroes of the Imperium, and they've really started delving into imagery on the cover of their books that are beyond just, like, sort of overwrought images of kind of, like, caricaturish masculinity, and they've moved into this kind of, like, vague pseudo-Christian kind of, like, exemplars of goodness stuff. And I think that when you combine that with Stahlhelms and greatcoats and Maltese crosses and words like crusade and purge the Xenos and stuff, you are starting to tread onto ground that people who lack subtlety and who lack nuance and right-wingers are notoriously immune to this sort of stuff. That you're inviting them to make these comparisons, and you're inviting them to say, oh, look at this cool thing. It's about what I'm thinking in my head, which is actually absolutely abhorrent. Anyway, I can tell you guys want to say something. Go ahead.
So I think what you've got there, I think you're right. I think that is always the danger with satire, and I think that it's been present from GW from the very beginning and its own sources. So Judge Dredd is a satire from the 1970s.
Absolutely.
On the police force and, you know, fascism. But there will have been people in the 1970s who were like, Judge Dredd's cool. I like that. I actually stand with Judge Dredd. And that is the problem with a satire, is you're always going to get people who take it at face value. And I still think you're really harsh on your fellow countrymen, Brendan. I don't think this is an American problem. I think this is a worldwide problem. In Britain, there is a comedian still alive called Al Murray, and he had this character called the Pub Landlord. And the joke was he was this really bellicose, way Great Britain, Winston Churchill, and it was a satire, he was taking the piss. It was literally, like, it was so absurd. It was like, he'd be like, yeah, you know, that Great British food, pasta and stuff. Like, it was, like, really absurd. But his audience, a lot of people picked up on it as, yeah, great, yeah, he's really, yeah, I'm glad that guy is there saying these things. And that's, unfortunately, that satire. You can satirize anything, but some people will not get it. GW is a difficult one, because I want to agree with Will. I want to be able to say they don't promote it as hero, and I don't think they do in the background and the lore. I think, though, they kind of do by putting the Imperium front and center in a way that elevates them a bit to be, you should be these guys, these are the champions of mankind, which even as a sentence you're like, oh cool, champions of mankind, I'm mankind, that's good. In some ways they do, like, yes, if you read it and for a second you're like, these guys are bad, to use the Dune equivalent, like, Paul Atreides is not a good guy in Dune, he is a theocratical absolute ruler. But also, if you watch the film from 1984, you're like, oh, well, it's about Paul Atreides. Paul's the goodie. And I think
you cannot help but fist pump at the end when it's just like power chords, man, and Paul's riding in, fist up, and you're just like, fuck yeah, man, stick him right in the eye, Paul. I get it.
And he's some, you know, hyper Catholic, like, absolutist ruler. It'd be terrible to live under Paul Atreides, but by pushing it, you kind of go, oh no, that is cool. So I do agree, Will, in some ways. I think if you read the books and stuff, you are like, this is terrible. This is just awful. But even, that's not
even the, even the books are inconsistent. The books are inconsistent based on author, what narrative they want to tell you about. And, and what we're really talking about right now is the Imperium of Man an objective good? Is the Imperium of Man an objective good? And I think that the fucking... in order for it to count as satire, the Imperium of Man cannot be an objective good. It has to come off as dystopian. It has to come off as inhuman and soul-crushing. Yet, I'm reading Dark Imperium right now, right? Because Rob and I, we're going to do a deep dive on the... We're trying to get into the Indominus Crusade books. We really want to explore them. And there's a number of scenes where there's a hospital on one of the worlds in the and it's in the fucking what's the system that fucking Ultramar system. Thank you. It's early.
It's like going out with my granddad here.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, so and it's all this pastoral shit. It's all it's pastoral and it's green and it's beautiful and there's all these there's actually a couple sentences where people are like. Kind of edging towards overtly saying, this is what we're fighting for. We're fighting for defending this. This is propaganda. This idea that, we fight endless wars for endless peace to defend the countryside, to defend the Volk, to defend the green sort of, Rome, Romanesque. And all that fucking ultramarine shit kind of has this very kind of fashy... kind of togas and aquilas and laurels kind of thing to it. And it's just like, that's dangerous imagery to be playing with, especially in this day and age. You know, there's a bunch of people who will look at that and be like, yeah, man, fucking Rome. That was the way things should be done. You know, like Mussolini, I mean, come on.
One thing you do have to say about Rome, though, good at penalties. That's a joke for all the British football fans there.
Another keeping it extra topical, but just to remain the sort of arbitrator of nuance. So I think you're both making good points, and I stand by what I said. But I think there's two parts to this. One is how overtly satirical a piece of creative work is, and then the other is how it gets interpreted. And as I said, you can have something that is clearly satirical, like Judge Dredd or the roots of Games Workshop stuff, and it still be misunderstood. And I would also agree, though, Brendan, not really focusing on the audience so much as focusing on the product. I would agree that my kind of appreciation of how Games Workshop and the stuff it's made has evolved since its genesis. It definitely is less overtly satirical now, and I think whereas perhaps in the past it was more humorously so. Now if you're gonna make the argument that it's satirical, you have to more directly just say, well, look, this is a character. This is a character saying this, and this is a flawed character, and it's a flawed opinion. But I agree that if you just take it as read. Take it at face value, they are now just selling boxes of with the word heroes on and books where the protagonist is a Primarch or whatever, and it's a lot easier to just be like, well, yeah, and that's the good guy, he's got the big shiny sword, and like clearly the Imperium of Man is the good side, and I would still say that that's a misreading but an easier one to do. So
I'm going to hold this up in front of the camera. If you're listening to this in podcast form, you can't see it. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably own this book, and it's the Warhammer 40K core book for 9th edition. And it's like this – on one half, we see Abaddon, who's cloaked in this kind of scarlet light lit from below by these like hellish fires of battle. And on the other side, we see fucking Gilliman coming in. For some reason, I mean, we know that part of his outfit is he has this kind of iron halo thing, and that's been part of the game for a long time. But he's got wings in this. It's not even part of his model. I mean, he's drawn to be deliberately angelic. Like, this is, like if you just held this up in front of somebody who knew nothing about Warhammer, and you said, what's this a picture of? They'd say, oh, this is, like, good versus evil. This is, like, some kind of angel versus some kind of demon. And it's like, well, I mean, little kids are buying this book or having this book bought for them. You know, let's say kids who are, like, 12. And this is their first introduction to Warhammer. And immediately, the first thing that hits them in their third eye is this image that is without nuance. And it is very binary. It is very much trying to tell a good versus evil story. And that's just what you pick up. That's what your brain picks up the first time you see this. And to me, when this cover dropped, I was like, this is disturbing. I don't care for this direction. You know? That's just me.
If they're looking at that with their third eye, though, that means they're an unlicensed navigator and should be shot.
Yeah.
I do find it interesting. Actually, it's come up a couple of times now, and I've not really picked this up before, but I do wonder about... we talk about the difference in cultures. Sorry, Will, we will get back to your podcast in a second. I'm now a bit more about Realm of Fire. But, Brendan, I think there is a difference with religious imagery, and this is something we'll probably have to explore, because in the States, you have... quite a religious heavy society, whereas in Britain, no. Like, I literally don't know anyone who is would describe themselves as religious. So it's kind of interesting. I wonder if GW are tapping that. And so, you know, the old crusade and stuff, that doesn't quite resonate as badly here, to go back to the Krieg thing. A lot of things that are demons and stuff like that, actually, to us, it's in Britain, that doesn't resonate. You know, it doesn't smack of idolatry and heresy. It smacks of fucking gribbly groblies running around in the dark kind of thing. So I wonder, you know, that's something that's quite interesting as a culture difference. We don't have God in our lives in the UK. Read into that as you will. Are we a bunch of sinners? Who knows?
Well, I mean, like, this country was founded by a bunch of, like, religious killjoys who, like, were literally trying to get away from your country and who were notorious for their hatred of having a good time. Like, no dancing, no Moppets, like, belt buckles on hats, you know what I'm saying? We all come from those guys. Those guys built the culture of America, and it still resonates today. I would be interested in seeing GW's numbers, like, what percentage of their business they do in the United States. I suspect that number is quite high. There's this part of me that, and this is just... you know, the sort of American arrogance coming through, but I would suggest that probably they sell more to the United States than any single other country, right? The United States is a driver, I suspect, for their sales. And, I mean, they stepped in it in 2017 when they were releasing this Cawdor model, right, for Forge World. And they were like, oh, look, it's the Cawdor gang leader. He's got this, like, pointy hood, and he's got a necklace made out of nooses. And Americans, including me, I went online the day I saw that, and I was like, you guys need to rethink this fucking model. And there were a lot of Americans who wrote them that note, because they pulled it. And then it was like 6 months, a year or something, before they came out with a Cawdor leader model for Forge World, and they had axed the noose, or the pointy hat. Because I understand, the pointy hat is like, it's a very kind of Warhammer thing to have. It's very Spanish Inquisition, it's very scary looking. But in America, when you combine that pointy hat with a bunch of nooses, that means something totally different. Like, that's just, like, that's some straight-up triggering racist shit. And it's triggering for white people. I wouldn't say it has any sort of equivocity between white people and black people. But, like, if you want to make this a hobby that's, like, open to black people in America, then you should not have anything like that even close to a board. That's horrifying, you know what I'm saying? Based on the legacy of this country's own sins, in a way, right? To sort of even use that kind of loaded religious word, you know?
Yeah, whenever you have this sort of conversation, it's so tricky not to kind of bring up like lots of like multiple sort of parallel components to this discussion, because I think, you know, I think Brendan, you make a really valid point there, and I think there are certain things that, almost irrespective of your if you like, reading of the fiction that we can say are just pretty distasteful images to sort of play around with and sell as an entertainment product, you know, especially when it, you know, when there's certain things when you're not, again, not overtly being critical in a historical way of something, then you're on really dangerous ground. But just to sort of park that and loop back to what you were saying about the religious imagery, like the way, for example, some of the newer books are painted, and that idea of good versus evil, and maybe this ties into Rob's point about, again, sort of cultural differences. But one thing that's always in my mind kind of been at the core of the way Games Workshop fiction positions itself as, if you like, satirical, and I'm using that as a, essentially paraphrasing the no good guys element of it, is that it doesn't specify good versus evil. It's always kind of more of an order versus chaos, which is, you know, clearly they use the word chaos with a capital C a lot, and then the order side of that is that sort of fascistic order. So, you know, they're not saying it's not a good kind of order. It's the abhorrent kind of order, where you're crushing everyone under a boot, and that to me sort of lies at the heart of it. And I think that is where they probably need to be a little bit careful with how they begin to represent that, because that imagery, to go back to the one that you referred to, you know, you could make the argument that you draw one character as, you know, illuminated with wings and the other as shadowed to make the point that they are just two sides at odds with one another. But yeah, where does that cross over into, well, the way you're portraying this is now it's now implicit in this artwork that we're not just saying chaos and order, that we're saying actual, you know, moral good and bad here. You know, I'm not sure there is an objective answer to that question, but I think that is where they need to be careful.
I think that's why, in a way, at the moment, Age of Sigmar appeals to me a lot more than 40k does, because they've outright said the forces are order, chaos, death and destruction, and the extreme of any of them is dreadful. There's actually, you know, there's a middle ground for all of them, and, you know, I know that sounds a bit, there are good people on all sides, but, you know, destruction, if you take its good part, is about renewal. It's the pagan idea of things are consumed and eaten and they birth new things. That is destruction at its core. Death is, you know, things will go in the end, so you've got to value what you have because things will decay. Everything has its time limit. If everyone lived forever, it would be awful, except to be a really cool 80s film starring Christopher Lambert. Order is good, but also order can be dreadful because, yes, you can get some horrible stuff. You know, when you've got the Daughters of Cain are order because they have an incredibly regulated system, which is to murder people, but they're order. Like, they are like, no, we have these rules and we have these set precepts and stuff. They'll still kill you. And chaos is free will. But again, take it to the extreme and it's, you know, Slaanesh preying on you and stuff like that. So I think that's why I kind of like the moral compass of Age of Sigmar and how even then. So, you know, you've got poster women of Age of Sigmar, the Stormcast Eternal. And it's very easy to look at them and go, oh, yeah, golden warriors who are super good and super great. And that's kind of how they were portrayed at first. But each of the different, like, sections of them have different views on that. There are evil 40k ones who just burn settlements to the ground if they've even seen something chaotic. But also, if you dig deep into the idea of a Stormcast Eternal, it's like you're resurrected from death. So you've seen everyone you love die already. So you're resurrected and you remember that. You remember your former life. Then you go to war and you die and you're reforged and it's really awful and painful and you might lose something of yourself. You might lose your memory. You might forget the name of your wife or forget your children's faces and you go back to war and then you die again and then you're resurrected. Like, it's a hell and it's an ordered hell. It is by the God of Order who's creating this. But that's terrible. Like, that's in what world is that a better position to be in than a Chosen of Chaos, where it's like, well, my God wants me to fight eternally as well. Hey, my armor's red, your armor's gold. You know, it's not great. And I like that. I like there's a bit of nuance that Sigmar is a god in the Greek way, that they've sort of brought in that he's just a guy and he makes mistakes. You know, like, literally, the history of the Mortal Realms is Sigmar fucks up. Like, he tried something and he messed up. And in a rage, he literally threw his big hammer at someone because he was in a bit of a paddy and he lost his big hammer. Like, that's Nordic there. And I like that. I think Age of Sigmar at the moment is way more interesting than 40k because the morality is more grippable and because you don't have a single perspective. I think that's why it does a lot better than 40k. You don't just have the perspective of Sigmar. You have the perspective. The last edition was all about Nagash. You know, so you kind of have that more chance to explore it as opposed to just, yeah, we know the Imperium of Man aren't the goodies, but here's 12 books about the Imperial Guard, here's 28 books about Space Marines, there's a Dark Eldar book over there, if you like, look in the back of the cupboard, I don't know. So you really have that blend, which I do think makes it a more interesting place to be at the moment. I'm just saying at the moment, because 40k hasn't moved for a long time, so it'll be interesting. But yeah, at the moment for me, Age of Sigmar. Don't know what the question was, sorry.
I think it's been a long time since we've had a question, but I'd agree. And sorry not to tread on your toes, Brendan, if you're going to say something, but I think that, you know, essentially the same ideas underpin both settings, if you like, but it's how it manifests itself. And so I would agree with you, Rob. I think Sigmar at the moment's maybe doing a better job of not pushing so hard that the you know, the Stormcast are the clear goodies and everyone else is evil, but I think you can almost superimpose the two worlds on top of each other, really. Like, you know there are so many not only direct parallels but, like, you know, sort of underlying ones, even to the point where they literally share factions. Like, you know, you can pick Space Orcs or you can pick, you know, non-space orcs.
Yeah.
I think that's probably actually quite a good example of what we were saying about how you can have an underlying concept, but then it's about how you present it. Because with 40k, like you say, there's, you know, 10 books about Space Marines for every one about anyone else.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of tried in a certain way in 8th to do this... To start segmenting the protagonists in this way, right, that they did with AOS. And they said, oh, you got Imperium, Chaos, and Xenos. And it works if you look at Imperium versus Chaos. And what's interesting about how they seem to be kind of envisioning the game in a certain way is that I think that they really want you to play Imperium versus Chaos. I think if GW had their druthers, they'd find some way to tie up all this Xenos stuff into a bag that is more easily approachable, right? Because Imperium is approachable, Chaos is approachable, and then you get into the Xenos stuff and it's a complete mess. Because you can't just do, oh, my fucking Necron army is crossing over with my Tyranid army. You know what I'm saying? Like, each Xenos race in 40k exists in its own microcosm of its own lore and its own mechanics that only work with its own mechanics and its own lore, and you can't have, like, orcs and gene stealer cults, like, teaming up. It doesn't make any sense. And that is a big this pickle that they've gotten themselves in emerged organically from the way that they produced the game for 30 years. But in a 2021 marketing department, like, thought problem, it's a huge pickle. It's a real bummer for them. You look over at AOS, where they had a chance to sort of, like, build this experience from the ground up with a lot of, like, foreknowledge and a lot of ability to look at where they wanted to be in, like, 10 years, rather than just being kind of like, hey, like, I got this idea about an army. Let's just make it. You know what I'm saying? And you can really see that that's a much easier sort of marketing department series of kind of like thought problems. You know, like, oh, well, these things work together. These things work together. And on some level, to a contemporary 2021 gamer, this is a very satisfying experience. Whereas there's some built-in frustration in 40K when you're like, oh, well, I just bought an orc army. What does it interact with? And you're like, just your orc army. Whereas some dude buys a fucking space marine army and it interacts with, like, 15 other armies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's the gaming group of 10 Imperium players, one orc, one Eldar, one Necron, isn't it? Like, you just... So, do you want a Realm of Fire hot take for free on your podcast? You can sell the podcast with this hot take.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think they should reset 40K and go Rogue Trader it, drop Chaos. Because there is no mention of Chaos in Rogue Trader. There is not a mention. Chaos comes later. The warp is mentioned.
Oh, my God.
But there is no Chaos. Keep it a science fiction futurist thing. No Chaos.
See, yep. See, man, you are so high right now. That is so bonkers.
Look
at Horus Heresy. Horus Heresy works. Imperium versus Chaos, it just works. They've already tested it, and it already just works. And what's funny is that when we started Realm of Fire, he came at me with this whole, like, I think they should reset 40K thing, and I was like, Man, you're so full of shit. You're crazy. I don't even know what you're talking about. But, like, more recently, I've been looking at 40K, and I'm like, are they heading towards a reset? I feel like some of the stuff that we're seeing in the way that they're releasing 9th edition books, I'm almost like, 9th edition is almost asking for a reset. I think that they want to make the game more, They want to do what is in AOS, which is what I've been saying, which is that they want more clearly defined, like, sticky groupings. And I don't think that you're going to be able to get that naturally by just releasing more books. I think that that at some point, if they really want to go in that direction, they're going to have to do something like AOS, where they go like, okay, there was a big fucking apocalypse and blah, and now here's a new game. And it's a little bit more, you know, here's a circle divided into four quadrants. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. Getting rid of Chaos is madness. That is bread and butter product. Why would you ever throw that out? You can throw out Necrons and no one will even notice. But like fucking and if you threw out Tau, there's like a whole group of people who would throw a ticker tape parade in the through the main street of your town. But, like, you throw out Chaos, and it's like, people will lose their minds. People will start playing fucking Wormhordes again.
I love it. It's a big take. I agree with both. I both think it's very unlikely, given the investment in it, for stuff like the Heresy. Yeah. But also, I do think probably what we're kind of describing, which is this really mismatched... pie chart where, like, most of the pie is Space Marine armies, probably does need a rethink. And there's part of me that the sort of despicable troll inside me does want to see them burn it all to the ground just to watch
yes, everybody's 100%.
reaction. But yeah, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with it, for sure. I'm gonna try and wrap my arms around this a little bit and just maybe just introduce a few questions, give this a little structure. It's been an excellent nearly 45 minute sort of intro tangent, and I think we've covered a lot of good stuff, and I'm gonna endeavor not to retread that with the questions, but one that I like to sort of well, normally I kick off with it, is basically to ask, you know, you guys are here, you know, doing what you're doing now. How did you each get into the hobby? Going back as far as you like.
You go ahead, Rob. Mine's not okay. Very interesting. Go ahead, man.
So I started because my brother wanted a copy of a board game called HeroQuest. Back in the day, back in probably about 1990, this would be. So HeroQuest was an excellent dungeon crawling game produced by Games Workshop and Milton Bradley Games. He got it. As a family, we all sat down and painted it with enamel paints. We played it a bit. It was a bit complicated for mum and dad, but, you know, we enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it more than my brother. But then he went on and got Space Crusade, which was the 40K equivalent to it, which was the introduction of the Imperial Fists for Fact fans, because they needed to produce three factions of Space Marines, and the colours of plastic they had were red, blue, and yellow. So they needed a yellow chapter. So that was the introduction of the Imperial Fists. Is that not right, Brendan? You're shaking your head.
No, I'm sure you're right. It's just a terrible moment in GW history where they should. If I could go back in time, first I'd kill Hitler and then I'd stop the Imperial Fist from being made.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in? We'll get back to your story because it's important. But
yeah.
That's such a great indication of one of the things I absolutely love, which is when anybody's getting like. You know, really worked up about the sanctity of the law is when it's like you do know that it's all just written because they had certain models and they needed a story for them, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. it all starts with the Titanicus model. Yeah,
it all like, starts with the color of the plastic, and then
yeah, yeah, 100%. It's like we've got too many fucking orcs left over. Well, there's this world called Gorka Morka, and you're just like, right, okay. So Space Crusade, then, like, through my brother's friends, started playing stuff. Like we took Space Crusade off the board and put it on a table with, like, boxes and books everywhere for hills and buildings, chain squares for inches, and then it turned out there was a real game. So at the very tender age of about 8... I had a copy of the Rogue Trader rulebook, and Jesus Christ, I don't think I still understand it, but I started playing from there. So really, I've been playing since Rogue Trader, more when Rogue Trader was sort of actually first edition 40K. There's a very grey period where it was really not Rogue Trader anymore. It was now first edition. And when second ed hit, that was big. That was the time that I really got into it. Boxes of Guard and Yarrick and stuff. And literally, I sort of around my teen years had a bit of a rejection of it. I became a bit of a historical guy, or playing every other game that came out and being like, oh, GW sucks. And to be fair, that was actually quite a dark period of GW. There was a period where it did suck. And so I fell out a little bit. There was a point where my miniature collection went down to 6 confrontation figures and the confrontation third ed hardback. Like literally down to that's all I own in the world. But then I built up again, and now I just play it for fun because it's toy soldiers. So it's covered everything. It really has covered everything, and it's been a constant in my life for 30 odd years now. So yeah, that's how I am still spending money on fascist Catholic Marines.
When I was a kid, my introduction to Warhammer and miniatures gaming is just inextricably intertwined with my story of role-playing. You know, like, I was a kid, I was in, like, 6th grade over here. I don't know what that equates to over there in your educational system, but I started getting into role-playing games. I lived in this small town that had a college, and in America, role-playing and, like, college towns, like, role-playing was the hobby of the college nerd for the longest time. This is the 80s, early 90s. And I started getting into role-playing via comics and via fantasy novels. And at the local small-town bookstore, which was a B. Dalton, they had a little tiny role-playing section. And then over in the magazine section, if you looked in the very back, at like the bottom shelf, very back corner, they had a series of role-playing magazines. And in the role-playing section, they had Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay with its grisly cover of the fighter guy impaling the troll with the mohawk. And then they had in the magazine section, because I'd always go back there to find Dungeon and Dragon, but sitting next to it, they had White Dwarf. And these two things were so different than American fantasy. Like, to my young child mind, they were so different. They were so out there. Like, mohawks and bright colors and fucking savage-looking dwarfs. It was so visceral. It was so violent. There was something about it that was just so strange. I wanted to be a part of it so much, and my mom was like, it's too expensive. You are not allowed to have that. And so I just kind of forgot about it for, I don't know, years. And finally I was in high school, and I became more kind of aware of these things. Like, you know, I had money to spend. I was playing a lot of Vampire the Masquerade at the time. And it just seemed kind of like, in America, it seemed like this kind of luxury game. Like, if you were a very well-to-do kid, you might have some Warhammer, but I certainly didn't. And finally in college, I remember it was first year of college, I went to the same college with all my friends, and one of my friends rocks up to me and he goes, guys, I think we should all start playing Warhammer together. We should each pick an army, and we should each build it, paint it, and then just play. And dude, I was so down. First army was Warhammer Fantasy Battle, Dark Elves for 5th edition. And then it's just been downhill ever since, you know what I'm saying? I mean, like, a bunch of those dudes who I started with, like, they haven't played in 10, 15, 20 years. I have spent so much fucking money on Games Workshop games and other miniatures games. It's an obsession for me. I could probably have bought multiple cars for cash with the amount of money that I have just frittered away on, like, fucking Skaven. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, it's my life now, and there was definitely a period when I tried to get away from it. At my lowest point, I think the only thing I had was a series of models I had painted as a kid and had, like, wrapped up in little towels and was in, like, a nostalgia box somewhere. So I went down to zero. I went down to effectively zero. And now I literally have a storage locker that is outside my house, and that's where I keep all my game stuff that I'm not working on. There's the stuff that I'm working on, and there's the stuff that I keep in a locker so my girlfriend doesn't have to look at it.
Brenda, what's your address and what's the combination of the storage locker?
It's a key, my friend. You'll never get it.
Damn it.
Alright. It's I think it's awesome to be fully invested in something. I think that's, you know, that's often why, you know, stuff like this engenders so much passion in people, because, you know, it's an investment of your, you know, your emotion and your time and your money. And I think it's probably a bit of a dark path when you start to compare what you spend on, you know, your hobbies or your free time on anything.
Never do it.
That you know, has some sort of utilitarian function. And
I don't encourage that.
Yeah, or do it healthily and compare. So I will, you know, bulk at the cost of a Space Marine unit, say, but I will pay 40 quid to go watch Manchester City play, and, you know, probably tenner on drinks there. So that's 50 quid, but that's fine. So then in that way I can go, actually, yeah, it's fine. You can rack it. It can be healthy if you also then realise shit just costs money. Like, everything costs money now. You don't get stuff for free. A film is like £12, and most of them aren't good. They're just Marvel films. So, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, value is so much about perception, isn't it? Because I've never been a big, like, sort of evening socializer, but I know, you know, this will probably make more sense for people in the UK. But people will go out on a Friday and easily spend, say, like, 100 quid on an evening out. That's not rare.
Easily.
But if you were to spend £100 on a Games Workshop model, people would think that was insane. But you have the Games Workshop model the next day and you just have a hangover, you know.
you've literally pissed the other £100 away, literally pissed it away.
And that's not a criticism of people who enjoy going out and socialising, no, but, it, you know, you just have to recognise that, you know, everybody values different stuff, and the same way that, you know, going to watch sports or whatever it is, you know, if you're enjoying it, then that's valuable, isn't it?
100%.
Awesome. I'm gonna sort of, we talk quite a lot about kind of not just what you guys do, but kind of why you do it as well. So in terms of what you get out of the games and that sort of thing. And you know, as you said, you're not necessarily sort of big, huge number crunchers, if you like, more in
no.
it for the social side.
I will say I did used to be. I used to do the game club that I ran with was very tournament focused for many years, and I regret that time in my life in a certain way, but it did make me a better player. But yeah, man, I used to be a grinder for for tournaments, man. And what's kind of interesting is that was in a time when tournaments were very different. Like to us, it was the era of what I call like the gunslinger tournament, which was just like a bunch of local dudes that all hung out at the same store. And then every couple months there's a tournament and you all get to be like, pew, pew, to see who's like number one gunslinger this month. You know what I'm saying? And to me, the formalization of the ITC and the way that the ITC has like really kind of codified things and like made this like international kind of web of rankings with like points and numbers and all this stuff, it has made everything so antiseptic and has just really taken the fun out of those like local area tournaments. You know, you don't really see them anymore. Like you see ITC tournaments and people who are practicing for ITC tournaments. And then if a local store tries to do one of these old school type tournaments, ITC guys will show up to it and essentially tank it with like ITC style lists. And I think that's a real poverty. So like, while I don't consider myself to be a tournament guy, and I was bad at being a tournament guy even when I was, like the type of tournament that I used to do doesn't even exist anymore. If that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, I've never been to a tournament. In my life, I've taken part in two warm up games. I was a warm up opponent for two people, and I was like, this sucks.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, they were like, here's an army, and I want to practice my army against that army. I'm like, okay, fine. And they're like, okay, so take all that off the board. I just wasn't paying attention, to be honest. It was terrible. Complete segue, the only tournament I've ever taken part of on a gaming way is actually, I tell a lie, I have played a couple of Keyforge tournaments, but I played a Magic the Gathering tournament when I was a wee lad, so I'd be about 11, and it was a sealed tournament. And I was one game from winning the tournament. And the winner got a complete set of the Dark expansion, which nowadays would be worth like hundreds, right? Like
thousands.
Yeah. I didn't know what I was fucking doing. I just got a really good box. So, yeah, I was like one game from the Dark. And that would have set me up for life, I think. But no, never played a tournament in my life. I'd like to do events. I'd love to do a day of like event gaming where it's like, here's the theme and here's the story. That sounds brilliant to me. I'm not averse to standing in a room, a very sweaty room today, of 50 people all playing a similar sort of thing. But just the idea of here is AN game versus here is AN other game with nothing linking them. Sounds dreadful, because I think also there's better mechanisms for that. Play Blood Bowl, because in a way Blood Bowl makes sense as that. You know, a Blood Bowl tournament is vastly more appealing than a 40k tournament, because it's a sport, so it kind of makes sense as a story, even if you don't have a story, if that makes any sense to anyone. Whereas 40k played in a completely abstract way to me, you might as well play checkers, you might as well play chess. Like, if what you are doing is seeing who is the best general, play a different game. Play a much better game than Games Workshop games, because they're not good games. They're fun games. They're not good games. Big difference. Big, big difference. Agricola is a good game. 40k is a fun game.
Yeah, I think just to loop back to sort of what Brendan was talking about a little bit there, and also what you're saying, Rob. Like, I've not been to a tournament, but the idea of spending a day doing something and doing it with a bigger group of people, and like you say, maybe having a thread running through it all that kind of links it. Yeah, you know, that I'm 100% in. But yeah, that last point you made, a game with as much randomness as well, yeah, 40K or any other kind of Games Workshop game in a similar way. It just doesn't strike me as the sort of game that you can like really leverage your tactical nous. And from what I can tell, and I am quite ignorant really in this sort of space, it seems to be that the way in which you make up for the amount of randomness is just by having to figure out like some particular combination of models and rules that eliminates as much randomness as possible, and at which point I don't know how tactical it is anymore. You've just found the loophole.
It's odd stacking, I think. I think the best players are the ones who can, which is, you know, actually, hey, that's war. You know, you never can guarantee a victory, so you stack the odds so that you get the best goddamn chance at victory. But there's always that thing that will go wrong, which, you know, that. But you don't have tournaments of war. You know, I mean, the winner goes to the one who spent them. War's the ultimate pay to win game.
The thing about is GW a tournament worthy game? I mean, that's like an ongoing debate. I think that one of the things, and I will speak to the virtue of the ITC in this way, that it has proven statistically that there is skill in Warhammer. Because for years and years, there was an argument there was no skill in Warhammer. It was dice, or it was GW blessed you with a good codex, and you were essentially winning in the list building phase and stuff like this. But when you look at the ITC and their rankings, and you see that there's this perpetual group of guys that are always in the top, and they change armies, and they change play styles, but they always win, right? It shows, like, well, what's the difference between that guy and some schlub who just, like, net lists his list? It's like, that guy plays his list better than the schlub that clones it. And it doesn't have anything to do with dice. It doesn't have anything to do with model selection, list building phase. It has to do with skill. These guys know how to play their lists. And to me, it's really put that to bed. That there are people who are just better at playing Warhammer than, say, me. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't all just come down to dice. It doesn't all come down to whack combos.
Yeah.
But I will say that point aside, it is still a game that takes place with, like, incredibly wild swings. And those guys will tell you, too, it's a game full of incredibly wild swings. It's fucking D6s, which have, like, almost no granularity at all. And if you fucking are sitting there chucking fistfuls of D6s and they're all coming up ones, well, there's nothing you can do, man. You're fucking toast. You know what I'm saying? If you can't make your tests, you're going to lose. It doesn't matter if you're Nick Nottavati or Richard Siegler or whatever. You're going to lose, you know?
I want to know what the, I think a big thing is skill. I do think skill is there. I think attention span is a huge part of it. I would love to see, like, a study on the focus and attention span of a top-tier gamer. Because I can tell you for myself, by turn four of a game, I've forgotten everything. Like, all my army special rules, all my little combos, all the little thing, I'm done. By turn four, I am thinking of the kettle and the cup of tea at the end of the game. And I'm like, I'm out. I know these guys hit on a 4+, so I'm just going to do that. I will just shoot your guys. Like, my game's really, by turn four, I am checking out. Not in a disrespectful way, just in a, I've forgotten what the hell is happening here. And I wonder if the people who are good are the people who can just keep that turn one focus for five turns to go, I know that I can do this, and I know that this ability will still mesh with this ability. Whereas I'm like, you know, if I've got command ability, I'll use it once at the beginning of a game because I've remembered it, and then I'll just forget that I have this ability. In the last game of Age of Sigmar I played, I forgot to attack with two of my units in a combat phase. We had five units each. I forgot to attack with two of them. Like, I was like, we just went on. I was like, I didn't attack last turn. Like, my brain is gone. But it was never going to be tournament based because I've abused it with substances over the years. So there's no way I was ever going to be. But I would love to do an event. Like, the idea of playing a big game and then having someone go, hey, you know, you can do this. Would be that sounds great to me. Which is, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going on a massive tangent here, which is why I think Games Workshop games, and when I say Games Workshop games, I should be clear, I mean all miniatures games, really. always benefit from an umpire or a GM. A GM more than an umpire, because, you know, you've got this person who can say, you know, you can do this, right? Or, you know, you should be able to do that, like a GM in a good roleplay game does. A bad GM is one who lets a player forget something and then go, ha ha ha, you forgot to attack my orcs last turn. Like, I'm not playing in that game. Again, this is all my opinion. A good GM would be like, you know, you could swing for that guy. And you're like, all right, brilliant, thank you, yeah. Vordrak the Destroyer swings at the orc. So I think miniatures games need that. Not need, but I think are greatly amplified by having a GM or an umpire. Again, I've forgotten the question. I'm very sorry.
Well, no, that actually like segues nicely into what I was going to say, which is sort of to your point as well, Brendan. Like my criticism that I made of like that style of play is not I don't want to tread on the people who enjoy it or tread on the skill of those who succeed at it, because I'm not trying to, you know, I was a bit reductive in just saying it's just list building or whatever. I suppose my point was really more about the level of appeal it has for me, which is that if I was going to invest all the hours that is required to be a tournament player, I think I would want to do it in a game which had less randomness is basically what I'm saying. And actually, to your point, Rob, I see, whether it's sort of Sigmar or whatever it is, I see it as an extension of role playing much more than I do a tactical game like chess. I just buy the models I like, convert the ones I don't. I have a little story for my army. I just mainly just take along the models who I'm the most keen on. Like you say, half the time not actually knowing whether they're good or not at the moment. And I just like those moments where something funny happens.
it's the way to play. And I will take the same... Sorry, Brent, I'll let you go in a second. But I will take the same topic. So let's say World War II gaming. If I want a really fun game, I will play Bolt Action or Chain of Command. You know, I will go, yeah, I want to have a little tank to drive around, brum, brum, brum. And I know in my head that is a war movie on a table. It's not a historical recreation. Even Chain of Command, which is a damn good game, and I highly recommend anyone interested in miniatures design, check out Chain of Command, because there is so much you can pull from that game and put into other games. It is excellent work.
100% on that plus one, yeah, for real. Yeah.
But it's still not war, because you're still, you know, commanding and you know, you still have this ultimate view over the battlefield. If I want to play a realistic, and I'm air quoting, people can't see this on the podcast, but I'm air quoting game, I will turn to a board game. I'll look at something like Advanced Squad Leader or Combat Commander, because they often have that tighter sort of, because they don't have to deal with measurements and line of sight, you know, like abstraction. They can say, this is the rule for line of sight, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's no kneeling down at the table and saying, well, I can see that guy's helmet, yeah, but I've converted him to be stood waving his arms around, so no, of course you can see his helmet. You know, it's very, this is what I want to play.
Yeah,
and they're both valid and they're both fine. So if I do want to play a tight, you know, really rules unambiguous, just a battle, you know, really want to get who is the better general, again air quoting, I will play a board game often, because I find them better designed. If I want to have a bit of fun, I'll play a miniatures game. And I think that is the same with 40K and everything. And as you say, it goes into role-playing. That actually, if I want to deep dive into 40K, I don't play 40K. I play Dark Heresy or something. You know, I'll play a game that tells it better, because you can only tell so many stories on a tabletop, because the story is, we're fighting, bang, bang, bang. You know, having a negotiation miniatures game would be very strange.
It seems 100% obvious to me that Rogue Trader and the games that sort of are the primordial Games Workshop games were designed as extensions of role-playing experiences. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that there was no question in their minds of the original designers. And if any of the original designers are listening and they want to come correct me, by all means, please do. That these were kind of like, oh, hey, these are fun things. They're shared experiences. They're supposed to be story. They're supposed to be like a kind of a story to it. A lot of randomness and swinginess. A lot of like weird moments that we're gonna like laugh about later. They might be frustrating now, but we'll laugh about them later.
Yeah.
this idea that the Games Workshop games need to be these like super laser honed precision tournament game hyper balanced experiences is to me just the tail wagging the dog. I think that this is actually a very small group of people who play Games Workshop games, an incredibly small group of people who collect Games Workshop games. It just turns out that they're incredibly loud on YouTube, on podcasts, on Facebook, and they want to always be ringing the bell that says, it's about us, it's about us. We are the ones that Games Workshop, we're the ones that buy the most. I don't think they even do. I don't think that's even true. Games Workshop has said for years that something like 80% of their sales just go to people who want to assemble them and then put them on a shelf. They don't even play. So it's like this idea that the game needs to take the form that a very small percentage of the overall demographic has chosen to apply the game to me is madness. It's just absolute madness. I want the game to always feel weird and roleplay-y. It just so happens that like tournament podcasts and tournament YouTubers are kind of fun to listen to because they sit there and they talk about math and they have and they talk about comparisons, and comparisons are interesting. It's like,
there's a lot to talk about. There's a reason.
Sure.
Sports, you know, you have a 90-minute match, but you've got 4 hours of, hey, let's compare this guy's stats with this guy's stats.
And this goes to football because we'll talk about European football. We'll talk about fucking British football, right? Soccer, as we call it over here. Like, there are because people will still play soccer. They'll just go down to a park and play soccer together. But no one will sit there and be like, oh, well, we got to get out the rule book, and we got to get out the yellow cards and the red cards, and we got to, you know, oh, we got to be real strict about offsides, kicks, and shit like this. No one will do that because there's an understanding that it's a game, and you're just showing up to fuck around with your friends, and that the important thing is that you're sharing this event fucking around with your friends. But then you go to Warhammer, and people are like, oh no, we need to play by these incredibly specific rules that are the ones the professionals use. And it's like, that's perverse. That's absolutely perverse. This is just supposed to be us, like, essentially having a kick around. You know what I'm saying?
That's really good. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Go ahead.
To go back to what you said, very early on, don't forget that a lot of early GW was labeled as 3D roleplay. Like, Advanced Hero Quest on the front cover, literally big red and yellow sticker, which I think maybe Wild in the Streets has just made a sticker of it, says 3D roleplay. Fantastic. You know, that's what a brand. They should keep that. That should be back. 3D roleplay.
That's actually a dude in Seattle named Hank Richardson. He does an Instagram called @3DRoleplay, and he's kind of into the old Hammer thing. But he also does some really interesting little role-playing games that are done as zines. He's very influenced by old GW. He does a role-playing game called Death Below that I think is really kind of him riffing on Dark Future, you know?
Yeah, it's wicked. That's like Streets of Rage. The video game. I've played that. I sent him a bit of play. I didn't realize the same guy. Anyway.
Same guy. Yeah, Death Below. 10 out of 10. Buy it.
To go back to the football thing, like American football, this is almost like GW. American football is a better game. It's tighter. It knows what it's doing. You know what you're doing. Soccer or European or well, everyone else football is more fun, I think. And this is entirely like to watch and to play because it's ambiguous. It is that equivalent of the GW game versus the board game. American football makes sense, and like there's like no problems with the umpires. It wasn't there like a case where an umpire got a call wrong like 3 seasons ago and it was a scandal. Like, people are like, holy shit, whereas in football, fucking hell. Like, every match, there's 20 things to talk about where the rest missed it, you know? Like, and I think that almost is a nice analogy for Games Workshop games. Games Workshop games are your association football, where it's like, here are the rules. Yeah. We might enforce them, we might not. And American football's like, fucking advanced squad leader. Like, no, this is the rule manual, and you will follow it. I don't know where I'm going with this. Sorry.
No, I think that's valid. But Brendan, just to pick up on something you said earlier on, I think given my sort of status within the community, it's very unlikely that the original game designers at Games Workshop aren't listening to this. call me deluded, but I assume they will be. So yeah, drop us a line.
Good. But, yeah. Hey, John Blanche, I'll say it to your face. Yeah. I love your work. No, but yeah. But
I've taken it.
He wants people to say things to his face, and I will. John Blanche, write in. Call us. We will say things to your face, please.
He's such a nice man, by the way. He's so nice.
I have no doubt.
Yeah. Sorry, Will.
I was just going to say, yeah, I just, as soon as I started a podcast, I just took it as read that, like, John would be listening to it, to be honest. But, you know, why wouldn't he? But, no, I think that kickabout analogy actually is really valuable, in as much as I agree that the Games Workshop games are that kind of slightly more fluid, open to interpretation, but actually there isn't really a mode at the moment that is equivalent to a kickabout. Like they have like the, you know, literally written down the match play or tournament play rules, and I think what they probably need is like a kickabout equivalent that's just less, like, I don't really know how to express it.
Well, open war sort of is, open play kind of is, because that does say just bring shit. And I mean, original AOS, where it's really first introduced, it was proper just bring anything. Now they've said at least have some points value. It needs work. It's good fun. I'm an open war proponent. I like it. It's fun. But it's very muddled, because four people can have different ideas of what's open war.
Just like when you do a kickabout, there's four people who have different ideas of what a foul is, right? And they're like, oh, you fouled me, bro. And it's like, yeah. But here's the thing, like, to me, you can't wait for Games Workshop to tell us how it's going to be or to give us the rules. It has to be about us showing up to the park with our ball and who we're going to play with. Because if you show up at the park with your ball, and then this guy rocks up, and he's, like, wearing his full kit, and he's doing the stretches, and he's referencing the rule book, and he's, like, getting all concerned and intense, you'd walk up to him, you'd be like, no, man, that's not what this is. You need to go home. There's a league forming over there. It's $50 a month or whatever. That's fine if you want to go over there and play with them. But when we're here, we're just, dude, we're talking shit, and we're playing. And that's how we have to be in, and this is kind of goes into like maybe this gatekeeping thing that we were just discussing on Fullmetal RPG, but like you kind of have to gatekeep these dudes and be like, just because you showed up with the rule book and you have a concerned face and you're pounding the pages, like, we're not concerned with that, dude. You need to take it down a notch, relax, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to play paintball and the guy turns up with an AR-15.
Do you know? You literally just read my mind. I was about to say that the instance where you see the full kit person turn up most is paintball. Always eight people who are playing their like first or second ever game of paintball, and then there's the person who's got all the gear.
Got a fucking Sherman tank just rocking up. just like, oh, hang on. No, absolutely. So shout out to Arbitrator Ian, who does a brilliant YouTube channel. I cannot recommend him more highly as someone to listen to. And if you're listening to this, come on our podcast. You coward. You're not a coward. But he has done a really good document for Open Play in 40K, which is that kind of kickabout. It's kind of, I think he calls it like Open Play Plus or something. And it's really cool. It's like, here is, in words and writing, the sections you need from your codex, because it's complicated. It is complicated. I was like, I'm going to go into 9th edition and only play open play. And then I was like, but so I'm only using data card stuff, but the data card says Angels of Death. So do I now need to use the Angels of Death stuff? And then you're like, so if I'm using Angels of Death stuff, do I need to use chapter tactics? No, I'm not going to use that. But if I'm not using chapter tactics, can the Necron guy use dynastic codes? So it all gets very, he's written it out and said, this is what you use. This is what you don't use. And that is, I think, the universal equivalent of, we will put down a ball, we'll make two pairs of goals out of jumpers. So we have this basic, if you score past this line, you score a point. If we score past this line, we score a point. we need that. You need that. You know, you could just turn up to a field with a ball, but if no one makes any goalposts, you're in for a very dull game. And that's, yeah. I think, the equivalent of that. And I think that's really good work. And I hope an Age of Sigmar one comes as well, because that at the moment, because we're in the new edition period, is a little bit janky, where you can be a bit like, so are we using this, and my battle terms for this edition and your battle terms for that edition, so are we allowed these things? So I think GW, as Brendan says, it's always been a DIY community, it's always been a DIY hobby. Fucking Necromunda had one expansion, but it produced 10 years of gaming because people were just producing stuff. By the way, are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good. and it always has been. And people who don't think that are kidding themselves. It's never been a master planned hobby. It's always been do it yourself. So just do it yourself. Go out there, make that thing so you can take that down to the shop and say, hey, this is how I fancy playing. Do other people fancy this? You know, talk to people. Just use your mouth and talk.
Yeah, big time. Well, I'm going
to... Or your hands, if you speak sign language.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to second that. I'm going to second also the shout out to Arbiter Ian. By the time this goes out, an episode featuring him will also be out on Dice Throw. And I can say he's a lovely...
Oh, shit!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that. Sort of weird.
Did I call him Arbitrator Ian or Arbiter Ian? I'm sorry, it's Arbiter Ian, isn't it? I called him Arbitrator.
Well,
I promoted him.
Well, yeah, I'm going to go on record. It's Arbiter Ian. He's a lovely chap. I'm sure he'd make an excellent Realm of Fire guest as well. And yeah, he's got a great YouTube channel. And like you say, Rob, he's also put a lot of good thought into that that sort of slightly more approachable version of 40K as well, which is, I think, well worth checking out. Awesome. Well, so I'm looking through my kind of usual list of questions and just trying to pick out the ones that we've kind of covered off through just generally chatting about GW stuff. So I normally ask people if there was something they could change about the hobby, what would it be? I feel like this crosses over quite heavily with Realm of Fire's general viewpoint. So if the answer to that is just listen to Realm of Fire, because we're constantly telling people what we want to change, then that's fine and we can leave it at that. But if anyone has anything they want to say.
Yeah, I think so. We will discuss what we say there repeatedly, what we want and how we want this hobby to change. We disagree. But, you know, yeah, that's kind of the main crux, is I think this thing, so I'm going to say it on a podcast. I think is that fair, Brendan? So.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, like, I mean, I almost kind of, like, wither a little bit thinking of our podcast as being just, like, us talking about what we want to change, because... Like, while I do have a bunch of pugnacious takes and there's, like, a bunch of things I want to punch in the nose, the fact of the matter is I love miniatures gaming so much and I love Games Workshop so much. There's, like, no one could talk as much shit about Games Workshop if they didn't love it so much. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Just don't do it. Just do something else.
I spend so much time immersed in Games Workshop, and it's like, to me, almost like the things that it's like mountains out of molehills in a way. Like, do I think Krieg was a bad choice? Sure, but like, do I love Games Workshop? Do I love 40K? Do I love the fact that they're pouring some time and money into iGuard? Obviously, yes, I love all those things. Fuck yeah, more of that, more of that. To me, it's almost just like when I'm critiquing something like how the Krieg models look. That's like walking into the Chicago Museum of Art and, like, finding some giant portrait on the wall and then going down in the corner and being like, that brush stroke sucks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that's right. Shit, I had a point. Damn it. Sorry. Right. It's
well,
gone.
While you think of what that was, Rob, I was going to say that actually... And you know, just to be a little bit more kind of heartfelt about it for a second, actually, I think so. I've really enjoyed Realm of Fire, and for me, it would be easy for you to just position yourselves as contrary and be like, yeah, we've got a bunch of hot takes, and just whatever you know the consensus tends to be, we kind of go against it. But actually, what comes across is the enthusiasm, and actually that sometimes is the bit that can get grating when you just you know, it's that thing about the negative minority tends to be the loudest one. And, you know, you can scroll through stuff you're interested in online or wherever it might be, and you just see all the people moaning, because it's the people who moan who are the ones who bothered to post a comment. And actually, what I've really enjoyed is, you know, it's nice to hear, well, both you guys and Rob, you know, particularly, you've been a vocal kind of champion of the fact that Age of Sigmar is not just this kind of like bland reset of the old world.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that, like, the popular consensus is to be like, you know, old world was better and just moan about the new one. And I don't take what you guys are doing as like just trying to be contrary. It's just nice to have a bit of enthusiasm because you know.
I completely agree. I think we're seen as a bit GW shillish or fanboyish, but you know what? Yeah, because I spend money on this shit. Do you know what? I don't like golf, right? I don't get golf. I don't go onto golf message boards and be like, oh, why are you still playing golf? You guys should be playing pitch and putt. That's the much superior version, because do you know what? I don't care. I don't like it. I don't care. So I'm not going to bag on someone for liking it. I am amazed how many hobbyists' hobby, and I air quoted there for people at home, is just fucking moaning. It's incredible. Like, people will say, I am into Games Workshop, and what they mean is they read synopses of the Black Library books on 40k Lexicon, they read the updated FAQs or whatever, and then they espouse opinions, and they never put miniature on the table or a paintbrush to the miniature or anything. It's incredible. It's a hobby wear. And I'm sure, do you know what? I'm sure you could go and chat to, you know, railroad like modelers, or, you know, any hobby really of collecting. I am sure there are people who are professional moaners in those hobbies. Football. I know there are football fans who won't watch a match. They'll watch 10 minutes, say, oh, it's rubbish, boring, going to go do something else. But they will claim to be a football fan. GW, if you don't like it, just don't do it. Jesus Christ, it's a luxury hobby. It's toys. You're buying toys. If you don't like them, don't buy them. If you don't agree with what they're doing, boycott them. Don't buy them. Do something else with your time. And I do think that's important, because I think people are snooty about people that like something. I think that is a very online opinion that you'll be like. So I'm going to reveal it now. I like the Star Wars sequels. Holy shit, you say that online, you're like taken out. It's like, yeah, but what about this? What about this?
Because you're wrong.
Shut up. Shut up. You go watch Attack of the Clones. do you know what I mean? It's just like, I just like this film. Go away. But people will be like, yeah, but if you like that film, what about this and this and this and this? And unless it's something incredibly harmful. If I was like, yeah, my favorite film's Triumph of the Will, then yeah, I kind of expect people to be like, take me down on that. But it's fucking fungus orcs versus Harlequin elves, you know?
One of the best things about the Games Workshop hobby to me is that it's so unbelievably multifaceted. To me, it's like this gem that is just, as you turn it in the light, it sparkles in so many different directions. Like, people want to sum it down as like playing and collecting and painting, but like there's also fucking reading the books and doing the research and hanging out with your friends and meeting new people. And honestly, there's a little facet on there that is whinging online or complaining to your buds, because we all do it. You know, it's like, it's kind of the, it's fun, and it feels comfortably like, I don't know about this rule on orcs, man. I think they fucking are ruining orcs. You know what I'm saying? That's a fun little part of it, but that's not the biggest part of it. You know what I'm saying? The whole gem is this. It's this thing that if you take the whole thing in, it's much more beautiful than if you insist on focusing on only one little thing. You know?
And you can moan and critique. We're not saying you've got to blindly follow something, but it's when you're bagging on other people and saying that they're wrong and they are. Like, literally, you are an idiot. I've been called a child because I like Age of Sigmar. And it's just like, what is wrong with you? Every hobby, you can moan. I can remember, you know, a new album will come out for a band and you'd be like, oh, they've sold out. This is terrible. I'm never listening to them again. That was, you know, that's part of being a music fan. that album happened to be St. Anger by Metallica, and I was right. But, you know, it was like a case of... You've just also got to enjoy it, though.
What's so wrong with being childish? That's my question. Because people... this is a thing about all of us middle-aged dudes, and this is like a, probably a bigger topic, but here we go anyway. Like, a lot of people have this idea that, like, gathering with your friends and, like, being fascinated with, like, little model elves or being at a table and pretending you're a vampire and stuff, they're like, oh, that's childish. And it's like, well, first of all, like, what's so wrong with that? Like, why is there this hard, this moment that you have to go through in life when you start taking knocks and you're not allowed to imagine anymore, you're not allowed to be whimsical anymore? The thing about the role-playing and miniatures space is that it opens us up to a certain artistic and crafts expression that is otherwise reserved for people who are professional creators, right? Like, you get to sit down and paint 30 minutes a day. You get to assemble 30 minutes a day. When you hang out with your friends, you get to do improvisational theater for 3 hours a week. You know, why are those creative expressions reserved for professional novel writers, professional painters, professional sculptors? Why is that? But yet somehow playing basketball with your friends is not reserved for professional athletes. Playing basketball with my friends when I was a little kid and terrible at it was considered to be a healthy expression of childhood energy. And if you're a middle-aged man and you go play basketball with your friends, that is also considered to be a healthy expression of energy. But why is it that we are told by our peers that expression of creative energy is childish and you need to be ashamed of that? I push back on that entire idea. I think everybody needs to get a little bit more childish and needs to be more open to these things and to live full lives. You know what I'm saying? Don't give up on your creativity, man. Just go down to Games Workshop and fascinate over some elves, dude. It's fucking rad. It's fun. Join us.
Yeah. I mean, that's a mega topic in itself in terms of we've been told that if you are producing something with your free time, you're wasting it. But that's a whole capitalism thing, which we're going
it's
far,
it's because you're never going to make any money from it, Brendan. And it's time you got a real job.
Yeah. There's plenty of things you're not going to make any money from. Do you stop doing them? You know? Hell no.
If you ever sound like the dad from the Twisted Sister video where it's like, at my age I was carrying an M16, then you're the bad guy. Sorry to tell you this. You've lost.
I think you know, this is a lukewarm take, but underlying a lot of this stuff is just, you know, it criticizing or having a little moan is very natural. When you have to put somebody else down about what they like, it shows that how much of your personality or self-worth you attach to the things you like, which is probably starting to get a bit unhealthy, you know? It's like...
Yeah. Like, I joke about Attack of the Clones. If you want to watch it, watch it. I will never watch that film again, but my eight-year-old nephew likes it, so I'm not going to be like, hey, you idiot.
Like, you know what? You it's child. Like, you literal child. How dare you? Become more sophisticated like me. I only read Alan Moore Batman graphic novels. Yeah. Oh my god, I'm so smart.
You like the bit where the lightsabers go vroom vroom. So yeah, very good.
At his age, I had an M16.
Yeah. I had to go through the dark times of Star Wars fandom, the early 90s. But yeah, do you know what I mean? It's like, cool, I will never watch it again, but that's fine. I'm not going to go and post a meme about how all prequel fans are idiots. It's just, you know, just get over it. Get over it and get over yourself is the main takeaway.
Absolutely. I'm gonna start to move into my wrap-up questions, because this has been awesome fun, and I think honestly we could probably do this for the same amount of time again, just chatting this, which would be great, but I'm gonna start to close up. So just to move off all of the topics that we've been talking about, when you guys aren't playing with toy soldiers or role playing or anything related generally to tabletop stuff, what do you guys like to do?
Wow, that's fascinating. What do I like to do outside of all this bullshit? You know what, man? Honestly, dude, 2020 was a very interesting, like, year for me. I think it was for everybody, but I spent a lot of time. This is going to sound so, like, hippie and weird, but I spent a lot of time, like, working out and doing yoga and, like, thinking about my life and my inner garden. And it actually caused me to kind of start going in some different directions in my life. I became, like, less concerned with, like, who I was in the game space and, like, the success of my podcast and these games that I was writing. I've been involved in, like, writing some role-playing games. It's been going on for years. And I was like, you know what I want to be good at? I want to be good at being, like, a friend. I want to be good at, like, I'm getting married in 2021. This will be my, this will be my second marriage. My first one, I was not very good at being a husband, and I really would like to be good at being a husband in the next one. I have a career in marketing. I'd like to be good at that. I'd like to do well with that. I kind of like to see my friends more. Because, I mean, these are the things that, like, our actual lives are about. I don't think when I'm on my deathbed, I'm going to be, like, looking up at the people around me and being like, I wish my Eldar army had 3 fully painted Wraithseers. You know what I'm saying? Just some more time, God. The 3rd Wraithseer is on my desk. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's I'm going to be wanting more time with the people I love. And this may sound very kind of like hard on sleeve, kind of American romantic, but, you know, there's a bunch of people I love. I want to be a positive influence in their lives. I'm very excited about doing that and being that. And then my other hobby that I am kind of new to is that I shoot guns. Like, so, you know.
No, that's the American sounding bit. Yeah. Having feelings bit. Also, I've got a gun.
Yeah, I also shoot guns. I'm new to this. I started actually purchasing firearms in 2020. While I was doing all my hippie yoga, I also started investing in firearms because it did seem as though society was about to completely just decompose over here, and I might need them. So, there was really a sense with the looming election in 2020 that there was the potential, however remote, that just all of America could turn into, like, Sarajevo 1991 or whatever, and I kind of wanted to make sure that if that happened, I was ready for it. So, you know, it's this gun thing has turned out to be really kind of fun. So I do that. I do that also. How about you, Rob?
That's amazing.
Well, I do the British equivalent. I just collect knives. But no. I didn't know there was an outside of tabletop. I am a big reader. That's my big thing. Big history buff. I was joking, but I literally have a book about 1918 as my mouse mat. I've got into a lot of classic sci-fi recently. I've been, like, delving into Asimov and Gibson and stuff and really just giving it a go. Yeah, big reader. I like being outside a lot. I studied archaeology at university, and that's never left me. So I'm a big fan of finding ruins and walking. You'll never see me happier than when I'm walking out a Roman ruin. Like, I love it. It's just something that was really that call, that echo. I realized this recently. So I've started with a new therapist recently, and we were talking, and I think this is where 40K appeals to me. I am a big fan of epoch-spanning media. I love this idea of, if I stand at the ruins of Vindolanda, I'm standing in a place where people have stood for 2,000 years, and some Roman soldier has touched this wall, and I've touched this wall, which is why my favourite books are like Dune, and the Foundation Saga, and my RPGs are like Numenera, and sort of things about these ancient... Just, I love it. I don't know what it is, but it just calls to me.
Dude, you're so lucky that you get to live over there and you get to experience that essentially daily, man. Like, that's just, yeah. Dude, that's so brilliant. I feel the same way. Just that idea, you get a coin in your hand and you look at the date that it was printed and it's minted rather, and you're like, oh my God, this coin is from 1912. And you can sit there and you can think about all the people that held it and what were their concerns, what were their lives like, how did they dress? Oh, you're so lucky.
One of my happiest memories, and I'm just going off on one now, was I went to university, went to Greece for a field trip, and I was doing a paper on the Mycenaeans. So we went to Mycenae, and we pulled up in our coach, and I was like, well, I want to get some good photos of this. And this is before digital cameras. I had to get my film camera. And a bus pulled up a tourist, and another bus pulled up a tourist. And I was like, damn it, if I take any photos, it's going to be swarming with tourists. It's a tourist site, of course it is. So I got off our bus as fast as I could and just ran up, literally ran through the Lion's Gate and then up to the top of Mycenae. Got up there, took some photos, and I had a proper like moment where I stopped and I was like, I am stood where Achilles was reputed to have stood, where Agamemnon stood, you know, like even if they're not real.
Yeah.
I am stood in this place where these people who echo through history have stood. And I was like, this is it. Wow. This is incredible. And that's what I want to do in my life. That is kind of what I want to do. Unfortunately, at the moment, a lot of those places, I want to go to Palmyra. You cannot go to Palmyra at the moment. I want to go to Uruk and Ur, you know, the first ever cities. You cannot go there at the moment. But while where I can go, I want to go. My family is half Italian. My dad's Italian, so I'm half Italian. So to go to Rome and go to these places and just be like, this is brilliant. So that's my major drive outside of tabletop stuff. Exploration of history through going to physical places. And football. I watch quite a lot of football. That's the other one.
Nice. Two absolutely excellent answers there. I think it's really important to have that kind of reflection and perspective on what you're doing, because you know ultimately this is a podcast about like you say toy soldiers or whatever it is, and it's good to keep that in perspective. I also really like that we just had a couple of quite sort of heartfelt answers, each one with a full step a full stop, just sort of perfectly attuned to the two cultures represented. Rob's like yeah, and football. Brenda's like, yeah. I spent last year really thinking a lot about my life and I bought a gun.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, is there anything, you know, obviously we've been talking about Realm of Fire and any mm-hmm. anybody who's listening to this, John, the rest of the original Games Workshop guys,
Rick, Andy, yeah. Brian Ansell,
Rick Priestley, and who you're out there, bro.
I do want to say shout out to Jervis Johnson, who is retiring from Games Workshop this month. Absolute giant of a man when it comes to games. Thanks, Jervis, for all the games.
Thanks, Jervis. Is there anything else you guys want to plug?
Well, I will just talk briefly. My tenure on Full Metal RPG comes to an end July of 2021, this month when we're recording this. So my final episode will be coming up here very soon. Also, my final episodes are there. I think Full Metal RPG continues on without me. I encourage people to listen to it because the people who are going to continue with it, I think, are going to continue to make it a show that is about conversations and that instigates conversations. It's not a show that's like afraid of topics, and it's not a pedantic show. It's not a show that's like, oh, 5 amazing steps to become a games master. It's like it's in an industry that is sort of kind of like waking up to itself and that is right now just consumed with pedantry. It is a show that is designed to deconstruct what it is you are doing at the table, what you find in the books, what your thought process is, and then to create spirited conversation. So please check out like the fucking almost 200 episodes that currently exist, and I'm on like, you know, 99% of them. And then please continue listening to the show. If you like it, please continue supporting it. And then I also do like a not small amount of work with a little miniatures game out of California called Slow Death Games. Check out Slow Death Games. We're working on a lot of stuff. We've got a game called Star Breach. We've got a game called Wild in the Streets. And we're actually going to be expanding our catalog and our horizons a little bit. And I think that the energy that we're going to be putting into Slow Death Games is going to yield a lot of cool stuff. So please check out Slow Death and support what we're doing there. Nice. Those are my shout-outs. How about you, Rob?
Very little. I don't have much of a life. Just keep listening on fire. It's just a bit about Star Breach. Next month in War Games Illustrated here in the UK, there are rules for Daleks in it. So you can
around
shouting and screaming at people in a Doctor Who way. I am just publishing a couple of things. I've got a couple of games on drive-through under Jelly Rovers. That's my sort of pen name. Not much, literally just one-page stuff. Not much, actually. Will, I've got a question for you, if you don't mind, to finish with.
Away.
What's your favourite type of crisp?
Oh, that's a good question.
Mm. I mean, do you want the expanded version of the question?
Yeah, give me time to think
about
it.
All right, you can keep this for your future guests. You've got £2.50 and you're in a newsagent's and you need to get a bag of crisps, a drink and a chocolate bar. What are you getting?
Oh, yeah, I like this a lot. okay.
This is like a Middle Earth Crisis question here.
Is it?
Like, yeah, dude, those guys love talking about, like, food.
Snacks.
And, like, and like weird candy bars that I don't know, like, what they are.
So, Brendan, if you want to play, you've got $2.50 and you're in Target. What ammo do you buy? How many holotips are you buying?
Well, for my personal sidearm right now, they're going for about a little less than $1 a round. So if it's a real screaming deal, I can buy three rounds for $2.50. Yeah. That's ammo prices in America, which are real bad because we're currently in the middle of the right wingers over here are like always going crazy, and so they feel like they always need to be stocking up. So the shortages are just obscene. Anyway,
like Pokemon cards. Sorry, Will.
Will, tell us about the strangely named candy bars.
So. I'm gonna assume that the context for the question is that I'm not like starving hungry, but I just want
And it's one of those newsies that just goes on forever. Mm. Like, it's brilliant. It's got every brand that's ever existed. If you want some Umbongo or something, it's in there.
Oh, nice one. Okay. I'm gonna go for the beverage, ice cold Dr. Pepper.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Just straight up normal full fat.
Yeah.
Good.
So this isn't an exercise I would partake of very frequently, but so I'm going very sort of full fat with this. Full fat Dr. Pepper, a double decker.
Oh, nice. Yeah, very nice. I once ate so many double deckers I threw all over my gran's floor. So little factoid for
crikey.
You.
Yeah, I can see how that happened.
So, Brendan, a double deck is like a nougat and crispy biscuit bit and chocolate and caramel bar.
Nice, that sounds good.
Yeah.
It's good. So just alternate timeline. I am absolutely starving, maybe on a bit of a sugar low. I might go for a boost.
A boost. I love a boost.
Boost plus a sugary drink. If you're not having like a sugar low, then at the end of that you're absolutely buzzing. Crisps, man, it's a real. This is just basically based on what I fancy right now. It's kind of a toss of a coin between cool original Doritos or just some generic mini cheddars. I'm not a big actually. Do you know what? No, scrub both of those. Original Pringles.
Yeah. Original Pringles. Right, a little tub of them, like a little tub you can get.
Yeah, I reckon we could just about scrape one of those little tubs. Very inefficient way to buy Pringles, but sure.
Keeping
it in budget.
It's a magical news.
Or I could buy, I think, what, like four bullets? Three or four bullets?
two and a half.
Ah, but I'm thinking about pounds to dollars conversion.
I'm probably getting
about $4.
$4.
You'd be doing much better with bullets.
In a shootout, you'd win.
And then, I was going to say, what are we talking about, Brendan? I've got a double tap someone if I'm going to drop a fall. You don't want to take any risks, right? So that's two.
Well, warning. Hang on, warning shot. Trace around. Hit. There's, and then double tap. Yeah, four rounds.
There's no warning shots in America. Oh, yeah, what kind of? Oh my god! What kind of socialist shit is that? No way, yeah. Man! Oh, warning right, shots! So my god! Around. If here, okay, okay. Here's the first rule of owning a firearm. All right, which is you don't ever draw your firearm unless you are intent upon killing someone. Like if you're in a situation, right, that's not like I'm not at the range, I'm not practicing, I'm not cleaning my gun, I'm not doing any of that stuff, you don't even draw or lift your firearm unless you are prepared to go all the way. Because
that's like June. Huh? That's the Fremen. Yeah. You draw a Chris knife, you have to draw blood.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's the thing. It's like this idea of being macho and like lifting your shirt and showing you have the gun or something like that. There's this idea of like psychological intimidation. That's not what guns are for. Guns are a tool. They have one use. That use is killing things. And if you are not prepared to kill something, then don't draw your gun. That's like
G.I. Joe bit. You know the end of the cartoon where they're like, hey kids. If you draw your gun, be prepared to kill someone.
Yeah, seriously. Else, why do you have it? I mean, that's the thing. That's another thing. Like, I my brother was telling me the other day. He's all like, "Oh, I'm thinking about moving to this city that's very violent in America, and I'll probably just start carrying my gun. Then I'll get a concealed carry license, and that way, if I ever need to handle myself, I can." And I'm like, "Leave your gun at home, bro. Like, just if here's how you don't go to jail for murder." Is you leave your gun at home. Like,
there's a song about it. Johnny Cash literally sang about it.
Yeah, right? You leave your gun. Leave your gun at home, man. Don't carry that shit around. If you think you might use your gun, then leave your gun at home. Because you don't want to go to jail for that shit, bro.
Will, if you want to leave the call, we'll just carry on. we'll just keep going.
It's amazing. I think it's so hard to... this is ideologically so different that it's hard to really weigh in here.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because... My context, I think most Brits would probably just be like, I don't have a gun, nobody has a gun.
Yeah.
My context is I grew up around guns because my family shoot like field sports, like shoot pigeons and stuff. So I've just got this image now of my dad like with a 12 bore like tucked under his shirt and there's like a pigeon and he's like. Pigeon's like, bro, don't even show me that unless you're willing to pull a 12 gauge out here. We've all got peace, man.
I live in Arizona, where not only is this what is called like an open carry state, which means that you can like just take a handgun and put it in a holster and attach it to your belt and then just walk around in public. Not only can you do that, you can enter a bar. They made a law, because before you weren't allowed to. You're prohibited from carrying your sidearm into a place that sold alcohol. And they made a law like 10 years ago where they're like, nah, you can bring it in. You can bring it in. You can just be – it's just like Tombstone. You can just walk in and just set your gun down on the table and say, sir, I'll have 3 shots. What could go wrong?
Yeah, you know? I'm 50-50 on this because, yeah, in the UK, I have only ever seen guns in the hands of armed police, you know, like armed response police at airports or major events kind of thing. Like, our police don't carry guns you have to be an armed response police to do that. But then I've got family in Montana, and they've got bears and wolves. Like, they need guns, but they don't. It's weird because they don't talk about guns. Like, everyone has a gun there because they need guns because there are literal bears and wolves. But it's not a gun place. It's kind of weird. But
in my country, the police don't even know what they're pulling off their belt. It could be a gun. It could be a taser. It could be a cell phone. It could be a mace. They don't know until they shoot you with it. That's just how things are around here. You just, you know, you walk out to get the milk one day and then... And then a police officer kills you, you know?
Maybe tases you, who knows?
Maybe. It's really kind of literally luck of the draw. Anyway, welcome to America.
Oh, incredible. Well.
Good.
what a way to wrap up.
Yeah,
thanks for having us on, man. We really appreciate it. This has been super fun.
It's really, you know, in seriousness, it's really nice. And it was very much my intention with this to just have these kind of more free form chats and have them have them with the interesting people in the community. So it's been awesome, and I really 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 appreciate it, guys.
Thank you for the invite. It means a lot.
Yeah, man, absolutely. This is great, and thank you for making your show. I really appreciate it because it's a great voice out there in the Warhammer community. Thank you for being you, dude.
No worries at all. All right, guys, I will let you go. Thanks so much, and catch you again soon.
Awesome. Take care, bud.
Cheers, man.